This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Well, welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, and I'm an independent educational consultant. And in this program, we talk with knowledgeable people that have some information or knowledge about the kids, how to work with kids, and especially struggling teens, teens that are making poor decisions, young adults, and basically young people. Now, to those of you listening live on K4HD, there's a chat box down in the lower right-hand corner if you click on that. And as we talk, if you have a question or a comment, you can type your questions in, and we'll try to talk about it as we go on the show. Now, today, the topic is cops, kids, and community. And I think with the headlines, this is a very, very timely, a very timely topic to talk about. And as a guest, I have Officer Jermaine Galloway. He's a law enforcement officer in South Idaho, has been for about 11 years. He calls himself the tall cop because at 6 foot 9 inches tall, I'm sure nobody misses you. You can't fade into the woodwork. But glad to have you here, Jermaine. Good to have you, and glad you could find the time.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to do it. Happy to help out parents any way we can.
Okay, well, let's talk about the generally, what are you trying to do in law enforcement? Because you do a lot of education, you do a lot of training, a lot of seminars. Overall, career-wise, what are you trying or hope to accomplish or contribute to?
You know, the education component, I've been big on education, going all the way back probably to my college days. And for me, you know, every law enforcement officer kind of finds something that they put a little more of a focus into, and for me, from the early going, it's been education, because I've always felt that you have a lot of parents, so since today is more the topic on parents, you have a lot of parents who really want to help their children. Maybe their child's struggling with multiple different things or just one thing, and you have parents who want to help out, but maybe just don't know how, just don't know where to start. Maybe you have teachers who want to really be proactive, but they just kind of don't know where to start, or maybe they just don't completely have a full grasp on what's going on in today's youth culture. And that's where I kind of think I'm that bridge for them, spending a lot of time helping them basically be where they want to be.
How did you get this specialization? You mentioned policemen, when they get into the career, each find something that's of particular interest to them. How did you get interested in teaching? You teach the fellow law enforcement, communities, and the parents, and largely about the growing concerns of drugs and alcohol with their kids, but I presume it goes beyond that. But how did you get interested in that? Tell us a little bit about how you your career evolved.
You know, that's funny you say that, because even my mom recently asked me that question. So with that, you know, it basically just out of seeing the gap, I became interested in learning more. So as I would see stuff on the street, as I would see different alcohol trends changing with underage drinkers, or different drug trends, or, you know, read articles the same as everybody else and just see these different things that are changing, I became more interested in finding out why. Not just, hey, you know, such and such is going on, but why is this going on? Why is this changing? Why are kids gravitating towards certain things? Why do they find it interesting? So just a lot of why questions, and then looking more and more into it, and then really kind of doing community scans, i.e. seeing what's going on, what, you know, what do these commercials I'm seeing really mean? What do all these things really mean? And why are they of interest to kids? And then as I started just looking more and researching more and trying to find answers to those questions, I found out a lot more people were also asking those same questions. So instead of just myself learning more, I took the extra step of now learning it, but now sharing it with others and teaching it to others to help them answer their questions.
Okay, so what's happening with youth? Could you give it in sort of a capsule? What, from your perspective as a law enforcement officer, what are you seeing is happening to the youth?
Well, sometimes I sit back and wonder, is it more or is it now just we see it and hear it more because of social networking and how easy it is for information to be shared nowadays? And it's probably a combo of both. With youth, what we're seeing is obviously still problems in the underage drinking world. That still goes on, and now with various different products, where before maybe a new product came out and it, certain youth and, you know, certain regions of our country wouldn't hear about it, now they do through various different social networking sites, apps, information sharing. I've always said that kids share information better than any group we've ever seen. I mean, their way of sharing information is incredible. Also, the drugs, drug potency is different. One thing for parents to understand is today's drugs are more potent than anything, whether they were a parent who experimented with drugs or whether they were a parent who were just around it, grew up around it, their parents might have used, what have you. Today's drugs are much more potent than anything we've really ever seen. And then you also see more drug mixing now, mixing of various different drug categories. You see mixing of drugs and also consuming alcohol while doing it. I mean, there's just some things that go on now. Their ways of consumption and absorption of drugs are different. There's so much that has evolved and changed. It can be hard to keep up with, but that's just kind of a snapshot of some of the things we're seeing nowadays.
Yeah, I imagine, I gather you're talking to a large extent about what's called synthetic drugs, some of the synthetic drugs, but some of them are very, very dangerous.
Yeah, the synthetic drugs, that's something, I mean, you know, when I grew up, I don't remember ever even hearing about anything like that. I'm sure that, you know, some equivalent of it was there, but I don't ever remember hearing anything about synthetic drugs, where now those are a popular drug, and not just with kids, with adults too. And, you know, various different reasons, from getting around some testing standards. You'll hear that where, you know, some people who are in the health profession field or probation field are talking about kids who are admitting using or they believe are using because of certain characteristics and things they're doing, and all of a sudden they're giving them urinalysis tests and they're passing them and no drugs are coming up. Many times synthetics are the cause of that. Also, the synthetics are more potent. I think some people believe that if you take a synthetic drug, let's say a synthetic cannabis, which many of us know as spice, you take a synthetic cannabis, then you think, well, it's synthetic, so it's not really marijuana, so it's got to be better, healthier, not as toxic, which is not the case at all. I tell people there's a lot of really good chemists across the world. I mean, you're not just talking your state, you're talking across the world. And when you look at it like that, many of these chemists have made drugs that are more potent, bind to the same receptors, but are more potent than the drug they're made to mimic. So when you look at synthetics can carry a significant impact, and across the country, I mean, you can pull up articles of overdoses based off synthetics.
So sort of an offhand, because I assume you work with kids or associate with kids of all levels of behavior, but it seems to me like while drug use is getting more and there seems to be more and more kids in trouble with drugs and negative behaviors, there's also some of the most outstanding creative type of kids. So it's almost like it's a reverse bell curve. What's your sense on the kids overall? And then we'll talk primarily about the ones that need some help.
Well, the kids overall, we can't just focus on the ones that are maybe struggling right now and then all of a sudden just group everybody into that category. You have a lot of kids that are excelling in many, many ways, that are staying substance abuse free, whether it's tobacco, alcohol, drugs. They're living healthy lives. They're leaders in their communities. They're leaders in their social groups and are doing excellent work. And many of those kids we work with, I see many different youth groups, even across my state of Idaho, that are doing excellent work. And So that's one thing I encourage parents too, is don't get discouraged, because you have different levels. You have kids who are right now highly at risk. You have some that are at risk. You have some that are right on the fence, kind of still figuring things out. And then you have some that are doing just great work, and maybe just one that's made a mistake once in their life. But, I mean, kids are still kids, and they're still learning, and they're still growing, and they're still, you know, those teenage brains are still growing, and we can't just sit back and say everything is wrong with every child, because that's not the case at all. Many kids are doing exceptional.
Yeah, well, that sort of answers the question. We have several questions from listeners, and the question was, do you feel kids are out of hand these days? And that's some are. I think that's sort of would be your answer from what you explained. Some are, many aren't.
Well, it's across the board. I mean, one thing I don't ever want to do, whether it's my own kids or anyone else's kids, is look and group them all together. Because, boy, if there's one thing, that's for sure, kids are very different. And even kids within your own household can be very different. So you don't want to group them all together. You want to look at them the same way even us as adults want to be looked at, as an individual and based off of the individual decisions they make.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's a topic that we can talk about briefly or a little bit more if you feel like it. This comes from a listener from New York, and I can imagine. Do you find the police are overreaching and taking things too far nowadays? Do you want to tackle that or say anything about that?
Yeah, I'm not even going to get into that because that's, you know, a topic in the media or something like that. I want to keep our focus on helping parents who are trying to help their kids. So,
okay, good. And so, okay, here's a listener who picked up your earlier comment. So natural weed is better? That's sort of weird.
Yeah, I don't mean yeah as far as agreeing with them. I just mean yeah and answering their question. Drugs are drugs. And drugs impact everybody differently. The problem is, are we seeing more kind of, I don't want to use the word catastrophic, but more just a heavy impact of overdoses right off the bat? Yeah, we are. But we're starting to now, especially with marijuana and the different types of marijuana concentrates, also known as waxes, we're seeing overdoses off those too. And what I explain to people is we can't sit there and focus and say, is one drug better than another? Is it better to take ecstasy than a synthetic or something like that? Drugs are drugs, and no matter what the drug you're taking, some of them carry some really negative effects to them, whether it's addiction, overdose, death. As we know, everyone doesn't die who takes drugs or who overdoses off a drug, but we can't sit there and just try to balance, is this drug better than that one? So my answer to that would be both of them are harmful, both of them are dangerous, both of them can affect your life in very negative ways. So that's why we always go back to the basis of don't take drugs. My answer for synthetics originally was we were talking about synthetics, so I wasn't saying one drug is better than the other.
Yeah, well, they're all bad. Maybe some more dangerous than others, but with immediate OD, like meth is more dangerous than weed, but weed's not good, as near as I can tell, from what I've heard. And talk about this. There's a bit of an issue about the new e-cigarettes and the cans of energy drinks. What's happening with that, and what's really going on?
Well, e-cigs, one of the main things, when we're talking kids, underage first and foremost, one of the things with e-cigs is there's still a level of education. Obviously, I'm big on education. Still a level of education that needs to be done regarding e-cigs because a lot of parents just don't know. You know, myself, I'm not a smoker, never been a smoker. So if I had not been a law enforcement officer, i.e. Putting some time into learning about e-cigs, I would be one of the parents we're talking about who really would have no understanding of them. And sometimes the juices that are in an e-cig, they can be non-nicotine based, where they're just flavored, or they can contain nicotine, or they can be laced with something else, depending on where they're coming from, who bought it, or what the individual using it is doing with it. So it makes it difficult for a parent or an uncle, aunt, outsider, really anybody, to know and understand what's in that e-cig and what people are doing in the e-cig. So e-cigs are tough, and now the market is flooded. I mean, many of you have walked through your shopping malls or through seen commercials, magazines, what have you, where you've seen various different e-cigs, and you probably aren't familiar with the brands. You're probably not familiar with the type, how to use them, how to turn them on and off. I mean, there's so much to those things that it just seems like, you know, they just kind of appeared and now there's a ton of them. But one thing to understand is we still don't have a lot of the data on e-cigs or on the juices that are in them, and we still don't really have a great understanding of what's in there. I'm seeing articles start to come out now from various different places, but again, we're still kind of so new into the game, we really don't have a great understanding of them.
And how about energy drinks?
You know, which parts? The energy drinks, that's a pretty wide market, so kind of what's your question on that?
Well, the question is sort of what's happening about, you know, the energy drinks? They're coming on like gangbusters, and I hear a lot of warnings about them. Is that becoming real popular with the kids? And is there any data that indicating that they're dangerous and something the kids should be discouraged from?
You know, I haven't read a ton of the data on energy drinks. I did when alcoholic energy drinks were popular. Most of those have been pulled from the market, and to give you an idea of what I mean, you had drinks that were prepackaged, you could buy in convenience stores, liquor stores, depending on your state laws, and they contained the energy, so they contained stimulants inside the drink, and then also the alcohol, which is a natural depressant, inside the drink. So you have both of those inside of the can. They were known as alcoholic energy drinks. They really showed up, 2008, 2009, somewhere in that time frame. And we were seeing those on the market till about 2011, I believe, somewhere around that point. And with those drinks, those things were popular. They were really popular and really had some high alcohol content, up to 12%. We still have drinks on the market that look like them, but many of them don't contain caffeine anymore. So one of the ways I've kind of explained energy drinks to people is when some of us grew up, I remember stopping at the convenience store on my way to school and buying soda, buying big soda pops, 24-ounce soda, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, whatever your soda choice was. For a lot of today's kids, that has changed to energy drinks, where that's what they're drinking in the morning, that's what they drink at noon at school, that's what they drink with lunch. I mean, if you just kind of look at the people walking down the street by you and, guess their age, you see a lot of younger people with energy drinks. So what maybe we all drank as sodas growing up, we're seeing more of a swing with kids with energy drinks nowadays.
Okay, well, there's that. All of this new things happening and changes, and some of the newer stuff, not much data on them. And the what can parents look for? Well, let's not forget prescription drugs either. That's becoming a real serious problem. But how can parents get on top of the new things out there, or what they should start to look for with their own kids to see, is there a problem? What would be some signs that a parent should look much closer at what's going on with their kids?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the first signs is, and I tell parents this frequently, is every parent should have a baseline on their child. If you're paying attention to your child at all, you have a baseline in their behaviors, what they like, what they don't like, maybe the way are they grumpy in the morning, every morning, and then throughout the day they kind of wake up, whatever that might be. When that baseline changes, when you notice that my son or daughter is out of character, when my son or daughter has had some major shift in their personality, and it just kind of happened out of nowhere. You know, it wasn't that, something happened that you know of. It wasn't that, some people say, well, our teenager gets into teenage years and they tend to gravitate away from us. I'm not talking something like that. I'm talking a major shift. On Monday, everything was fine for the last 4 years, and all of a sudden you're seeing major changes. There's always a reason for that. And the reason isn't always negative. It's not always because alcohol or drugs. So don't, freak out because your son or daughter all of a sudden changes personalities and now you're thinking that they're getting high. It's not the case at all. But there's generally a reason for it. And you need to start trying to figure out what that reason is. What I frequently say is ask questions, but don't always lead the conversation. Ask questions and let them lead it. Let them talk. Let them open up. Let them express things to you. It doesn't have to necessarily be you leading the conversation.
No, it's probably better that way. Listening is the most important communication tool. There might be a change in a kid, but it might be a bullying going on or something like that's happening that's causing some reaction. And it's the sooner the parents get on top of it, the better, right?
Yeah, it could be. I think you sorry, my phone cut out, but I think you said bullying. Yeah, it could be. They could be getting bullied. They could have had a breakup in a relationship. They could be getting some peer pressure from people. They could be just completely stressed because, you know, your student really cares about getting A's and B's, and they're getting some C's. I mean, there's so many different things, and it's not always kind of a negative problem. I mean, if my son was stressed because he's getting a C and wanted to be getting a B, hey, you know, I'm happy that he's challenging himself. But it could be anything. You know, the sports team's not going well. So you can't just sit and look at it as one thing. It would be nice if we could. It would make it easy to be a parent if I could just sit back and know every single time my son's stressed, it's because, you know, basketball's not going well for him. But that's not the case. You have to ask questions. You have to kind of stay active with it, too, because a lot of times, like many of us do as adults, when someone says, what's wrong, we say nothing, everything's fine, you know, and clearly something's wrong, but we just don't want to answer. You have to just kind of stay there and just be a voice of reason for them and listen, and sometimes share your own experiences if you think something's wrong because, hey, they're stressed about grades. Share your own experiences about your grades and how things stressed you out. I just recently shared one of my high school experiences with my son just last week, as a matter of fact, because sports. He really challenges himself in sports, and I shared one of my stories about sports and about how you know, hard work led me to a certain place and a certain goal in sports. And it's the first time I've shared it with him, and you know, in our life. But sometimes those conversations are needed to come up.
Mm-hmm. So, you talk to kids quite a bit. What's your impression of the kids you talk to? What kind of questions do they ask?
Right now, a common question would be stuff based off marijuana because of a lot of the legalization. That's probably a pretty common question I think every parent is seeing from kids. I'm not just getting that from kids. I'm getting that from parents who want to figure out how to address it with their kids. That's a pretty common question because when you sit back and you say, you know, drugs can be harmful, but yet they see recreational use going up, you know, as a kid, that teenage brain, they're going, well, can you explain this to me? And can you explain why? Can you explain what's going on? And again, that's, you know, a tough answer. And I'm sure that's a question some of your viewers have or some of your listeners have. And one of the most common things, again, that we as parents and adults should understand based off the data and the science that's there is that that teenage brain is still developing. It's still growing. We know that, you know, the marijuana will impact memory. It impacts learning, especially with kids. And you're seeing some studies that are talking about it impacting kids more than it impacts adults. So one of the things is, again, how we don't want to just group everybody together. We can't necessarily just group all the kids together and go, well, you know, this is fine for everybody. So there's some stuff that kind of needs to be talked about with our kids.
You know, one of the things that you talk about is, I guess you give in presentations, the mock teenage bedroom that you use for a demonstration. And tell us about that and what some of the reactions are and as much as you can verbally describe what you're trying to do with that mock teenage bedroom.
Yeah, frequently what we get is it's usually community coalitions. Most communities, either in your community or near your community, have a drug and or alcohol-free coalition. It's just a group of usually volunteers, maybe a paid staff person who's there to bring, you know, education into the community, usually, and it's usually youth-based. So a lot of times your community coalitions say, how can we help parents? And what's a creative way outside of just, you know, having parents sit down and have to listen to a lecture of some type? You know, just trying to think of creative outside-the-box ways. So one of the groups that I learned it from was a group out of the Midwest who started to develop a mock room. And basically what they do is put together a bedroom, and it might be in an auditorium or what have you, but to the best of their ability, put together a bedroom. And so you have a bed in there, a dresser, a lamp, some other stuff, a closet ideally. And then you put normal filler stuff. So you throw soda cans on the floor, water bottles, you throw video games around, stuff like that. And then you have clothes laying everywhere. But then you also mix in some popular culture items, like some popular culture drug terms, maybe some alcoholic drinks like what we talked about that a lot of people aren't so familiar with are actually alcohol. Some, you know, what a whipped cream bottle could constitute and could mean. If there's multiple whipped cream bottles lying in your child's trash can, what that could mean and what that could lead to. So it's stuff that isn't 100% an identifier, but what could this lead to? It could be nothing, which is great and easy, or it could be something and it could mean something, and how do you start to figure out what that is? So you basically just make up a mock bedroom and make it look like a possible teen, an at-risk youth, or maybe someone who you didn't perceive to be at risk but has at-risk items in there, and make it look like their bedroom. Put posters on the wall, all that stuff, of some popular culture artists. You know, do you know anything about the music your kids are listening to, the video games, all of that stuff?
Okay, so what were some of the items that might lead to something potentially?
Well, I talked about whipped cream bottles. If used properly, you get some whipped cream out of it. It's great, you know, add it to your dessert. If not used properly, it could be an inhalant like nitrous oxide. Nitrous oxide's in those whipped cream bottles, and those whipped cream bottles, if they hold them a certain way, they can extract the nitrous oxide without getting the whipped cream, which will give them a high. The problem is they're depriving their brain of oxygen, and when they do that, many of the kids, and adults for that matter, who overdose off nitrous oxide are basically suffocating themselves to death. So an item like that, or, you know, a T-shirt, you know, trying to keep it simple for parents, a T-shirt that has the term 420 on it, so 420, which is known as a popular culture universal time and date to get high. So now 420 more comes out of the marijuana world, but it doesn't necessarily mean that marijuana is their drug of choice, but it also doesn't necessarily mean that they're using drugs, because all it is, again, is a screen-printed T-shirt. So you have to try to figure out, why is that there? Are they just trying to associate? Do they not know what it means? Do they like the colors? Or is it associated with the drug world?
Well, they could give you some good clues for questions to ask and then to listen to the answers.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, for me, one of the things I do is I encourage parents, when you're listening to the radio, watching the news, watching something, and something kind of comes across that could be drug or alcohol related, there's your opportunity for the conversation. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, you come to the living room table, you dim the lights, and you have this whole 30-minute sit-down, awkward conversation because, you know, your child's like, you know, Dad, you never, ever sit me down at the table and have a 30-minute conversation. Why are we doing it now? It's more when you're driving to the basketball game, you're driving to the high school football game, you're going to go get ice cream, the family's going to dinner, and you hear something or see a billboard or see something. That's when you kind of start the conversation, and a frequent way to start it is, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that? Have you heard anything about that? Have you seen anything like that? Do other kids talk about this? That's a good way to start it, because many times parents will be very shocked what their kids know. It doesn't mean their kids are into anything, but actually how much they actually know.
You know, a rule of thumb, I raised 4 kids, and then I worked with a lot of kids at my job. But my rule of thumb is you take what the parents know, multiply it by a factor of 10, and you're probably closer to what they know and they're doing. That was based on my good, well-behaved kids.
Yeah, that's probably a good rule of thumb. I find that the kids tend to know more than the parents do. And it's just, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we're, you know, as a parent, we're not in high school, we're not in junior high, we're not in elementary, we're not, you know, listening to all the same music, we're not playing all the video games, we're just not as involved in the culture because we're adults and that's just not really what a lot of us do. So
yeah, we're in our culture.
Just like there's stuff that we do that our kids would have no idea about certain musicians and all the rest. It's just the same thing. So it's not that we're not trying to learn, it's just not the culture we live in, and it's just kind of always going to be like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have to take a quick break for an important announcement. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we're talking with Officer Jermaine Galloway, Cops, Kids, and Community. And we'll be right back after a minute, so stay tuned.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24-month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, talking with Officer Jermaine Galloway, and the topic is cops, kids, and community. And we're talking about the mock teenage bedroom. Could you give some other examples? Well, one of our listeners said, made a suggestion. You talked about the 420. A kid could just think 420 is funny because he knows it's about weed, and nothing more than that.
Yep, and that's exactly what I meant. That's why I explained right at the beginning, and I kind of explained during that. You can't just look at something and make an assumption. We all wish it could be that easy. It's far from it, because you don't know what it means to that person. And you could even have three teenage boys inside the house, and it could mean something different to each and every one of them. So that's why you have to start asking questions and then be more of a listener instead of leading that conversation. So, yeah, I 100% agree with you.
Okay, what are some of the other things like, one of the things I imagine you get into in your mock teenage bedroom is hiding places, if they do have drugs, where they might hide them that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, and the hiding places, boy, that could be an all-day conversation in its own. I mean, you know, there are so many places, whether it's homemade, whether it's purchased. You know, a lot of us have seen the cans with the false compartments in them where they just twist off the top or twist off the bottom. A lot of those various different places. I mean, I had one parent recently. No, it wasn't recently. It was now probably about a year and a half ago. One mom said that she found it in a highlighter, which has been a popular place for ages for people to hide stuff. But I asked her how, you know, because I like to be able to share that with other parents. And she basically said, I noticed this highlighter on my son's dresser, and it had been there multiple times, but yet I'd never seen him use it. But yet every time I kept walking in his room, it was on his dresser. So finally, I picked it up and looked at it and kind of started manipulating it a little bit, and all of a sudden, I was able to pop out the bottom, and that's where he had it hidden. And a lot of parents, you know, getting feedback from the parents, from you guys, have said that exact thing, that it was just out of place. If there's one thing, you know, because you can't really have a class on every hidden compartment. It just, you know, it would be a week-long class, and you'd forget 90% of it. It's just things that are out of place. When you feel like something isn't right, trust that instinct, because that's instinct that whether you're walking down a dark alley at night that keeps you safe, or whether you are, you know, walking into your son or daughter's room and you're looking around the room and you just feel like, why is that poster out of place? Why is that item out of place? What is, you know, why do I keep seeing, you know, why is there a whipped cream bottle in here? Why am I seeing these things? You need to kind of trust your instincts, and you can do the good part for us as parents. Is you can do internet research. You can start looking up stuff and just typing in some random keywords, and you'll start to see stuff come up. You'll see articles come up. You'll see information come up that will help you kind of figure out and start to piecemeal this whole thing together.
Okay, you mentioned a little bit ago about a lot of your presentations were to community groups, and I gather that's where parents are working together to try to stop the abuse of drugs and alcohol. So how can parents work together, or what are some of the models that they might look at if they wanted to do something?
Yeah, one of the first things I would say is, as a parent or for your listeners, when they see some of these presentations coming to their communities, they should look at going. Like I said, a lot of your coalitions bring them in, and sometimes as parents, we see a flyer that says alcohol and drug presentation. And we go, you know what, I know all that. I've heard it 100 times, heard it 1,000 times, and you don't attend. And yet it could be your local coalition putting on the presentation, and maybe they're going to talk to you about local stuff. A lot of them bring local data. So you're not just hearing the national stuff that a lot of us see, but you're actually seeing what's trending in your own backyard through the schools your kids go to. A lot of the schools participate in excellent surveys, and you can see what's flowing through your own school or your own district. So I encourage people to go to some of those, because, there's a lot of good information. Now, maybe you're not going to learn a ton of stuff, but maybe you'll learn something or pick up something. And I encourage people to go to those. Be active in those.
What might a parent do if they sense a problem, but there's no community a coalition like that?
Yeah, some of the resources, let me just go off the top of my head here, that might be available. Again, every community is so different. Through your health and welfare office, you know, they're called different names, but the equivalent of your health and welfare office, your coalition, your police department might have resources. If there's a college or university near you, large or small, they might have some resources available for you. You know, there's other resources through CADCA, Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. They put out data. So that's CADCA, Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America. NIDA, National Institute for Drug Abuse, puts out information, and I believe that they have resources that they can send you. There's a bunch of different ones out there, and you can literally do some Google searches, and some of those big federal ones will pop up first. If you're worried about or want to find information on a specific drug or something like that, maybe some what's the impact or what does it do or any of that, the DEA, you can do research through DEA. They put out a lot of little worksheets that are very simple and easy for parents. They're really created for people who maybe don't have an understanding of a certain drug or how it works or what it's doing or the negative impacts of it. You can just do Google searches and find stuff from the DEA. So there is stuff that's out there that you can find some, and hopefully someone within your area has resources. And, of course, there's counselors. Most schools now have counselors, and you also have private counselors that are out there. I mean, hopefully in your area there's some resources for you, but it really just depends on where you live and maybe how close to a certain city you live to.
Okay, so I think the bottom line of that is if a parent is in an area where there is a coalition or some community group, because I would imagine communities working together and the problem would be much more effective, just contact that. But if there's not, then it's motivated to get that information and maybe help start one would be a good way to do it, because then you can get some allies and some education, local education. I would think that would be the big advantage of some sort of a coalition like that.
Yeah. Get one started yourself. There are coalitions within every state. So let's say you live in, you know, some state and there's not a coalition within 3 hours of you. Still contact the one that's 3 or 4 hours away and talk to them about getting one started in your area, because generally one coalition will help another. They're actually really good about that, about getting stuff started. Or that coalition can still give you info and resources, because maybe, you know, you live on the border of your state, so the next coalition is the next state over, but they're only 45 miles away from you. So you contact those guys, because a lot of times they have the information and they will share it with you, or at least be able to lead you to other resources in your area. So it doesn't just have to be someone in your city. It can be anyone really within your region, and you have different groups in every single state who are there. I know that for a fact. So there might not be one in your city, might not be one in your county, but there's going to be one in your state.
Okay, well, how can law enforcement, parents, and community members work together? And I'm thinking particularly of the law enforcement. What can law enforcement do to help the parents and to get a cooperative situation going? I think this is in the area of what's been called positive or community policing. Talk about that a little bit.
Community policing. So first, kind of the philosophy of community policing is doing more on the front end to prevent on the back end, meaning the goal is not to put more people in jail. The goal is to not write more tickets. The goal is to do simply more education, more prevention, more informing people so that your community is healthier, safer, therefore reducing problems on the back end, i.e. people going to jail, burglaries, homicides, injuries, assaults. It's reducing all that stuff on the back end to where everyone's happier. The person's not getting assaulted. They're not the person who did the assault, not going into the criminal justice system, all of it, because none of it occurred. And a lot of that is just through education. So one of the things to understand is inviting your law enforcement in more on the front end. People look at law enforcement, and obviously they look at, you know, people who respond to car accidents, make arrests, deal with stuff like that. But a big part of law enforcement and a big part of community policing for years has been to be more active on the front end. So when you're having these community events, when you have some event where you're going to have other people there, what have you, when you want someone to come in and talk to your schools, contact your local city law enforcement, your county, your state, whomever it might be. Have them come in and be part of that. Have them come in and speak. Come in and pass out stickers. One of the things I've really been big on is getting to know my community members on the front end, so if they need something, they feel comfortable in talking to me or comfortable in reaching out or emailing or asking that question, building a proactive relationship. So if they do need you one day, they feel comfortable talking to you.
That's really key to me, is the solution is develop a relationship. And I see some of the problems with the police that's going on now is there somehow, for some reason, there wasn't a relationship developed. And one example I think of is the DARE program. Now, DARE has been criticized because it didn't do its job as well to prevent. But the kids got to meet the policemen and find out that they were humans and caring And it was very positive in that way, is from what I've read.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I think DARE has been a successful program. I mean, if you look at a program, I guess if someone wanted to make a criticism of any program, they could. But I look at DARE, and I think it's been successful, but I think there's been a bunch of successful programs. I personally don't think any one program is perfect for everybody because, again, it goes back to what I said earlier. Everybody's a little bit different, and there's different ways that you address different groups, and different ways will impact different groups of people. So even within your own home, you look at your four kids, let's say, look at each of them as kind of a different group of people and say, you know, maybe for one of them it's through grades, one of them is through sports, one of them it's through not having their iPod, one of them is through not having their cell phone, whatever it might be. But if you just have one program and you expect to use that one program to address all four of your kids, that's probably not going to be overly successful, although it will be more successful than doing anything. So it's kind of like looking at the overall and being creative, and then, of course, not just doing one program forever, but maintaining that while doing another, while adding in another. And it's just, again, being creative. So like I said, I think DARE has been successful, but I think there's many other programs also that have been successful, and I think doing all of them at some point, incorporating all of them into what's going to work best for you, your kids, and your family is probably the way to look at it instead of just saying, well, this program didn't work for me, so it doesn't work. Well, it might not have worked for you, but it doesn't mean it didn't work for me or didn't work for one of my coworkers. So I think that's the way to look at it.
Okay, well, we have about 10 minutes left, and I'd like to give the last few minutes to you talk about how to get a hold of you and a little bit about your website and all that. But talk about your personal goals, and we talked about this a little bit at the beginning. What are your goals in teaching others? And together it's what to know so that you can stop the abuse. So talk a little bit about your philosophy and what you'd like other people to be doing as well as yourself, or what you're doing and that you think other people should do.
So just to make sure, well, and also I mentioned a little earlier, I have about 2 minutes left, but so you're asking, just to make sure I get the question right, what I think other people could do in their communities to kind of help make them healthier, or what's your question a little bit?
Well, my goal is to explain a little bit about what you're trying to do, what to know, teach them, give them the knowledge, the education, and could just elaborate some more on that, because you touched on it earlier on, but elaborate a little bit more on what to know so you can stop the abuse, and we've touched on some of that, but I'd like to get sort of an overall what other people could be doing, some tips for somebody that wanted to put, another way to put it, is tips for somebody to, some parent or somebody that wanted to try something and do something that wasn't being done in their community.
Okay. So, yeah, ultimately, don't be afraid to try a new program, even one you've created. I touched on this a little bit earlier, I don't think one program works everywhere. You know, you can't do the same program in a city of 4 million people that you do in a city of 4,000 people. It might work, it might not. And also, many times in our communities, people want programs that they feel like are kind of geared towards them. You know, even if the program is really successful, everyone goes, well, that's nice that worked there. But what's going to work for us? So what you want to do at the beginning is bring in multiple different stakeholders. You want to get your schools involved. You want to get your health department involved. You want to get your law enforcement involved. You want to get, if there is a coalition or someone who's working as a coalition, you want to get them involved. You want to get your businesses involved. You want to get all those different groups involved at the table. Many of you in your communities, a lot of those different sectors I've mentioned, they're friends of yours already. You don't have to go look very far. You can look at the people who come over to watch the Super Bowl at your house. I mean, you can look at some of those groups and go, I have an idea. This is what I'm thinking about doing. Can you help me out? Some of you at the beginning, it isn't going to go as well as you thought. You're not going to get the response that you thought. But it doesn't mean you give up, because, again, our goal is to raise healthy kids and healthy children and have them grow up to be healthy adults. Our kids are going to make mistakes. The kids are human. They will make mistakes. But the goal is to help them kind of work their way through that. So being creative, figuring out ways create things in your community. Also sitting back and what does your community need? Do they need more after-school activities? Do they need more weekend activities? Do they need more outreach where they get to know other people in the community who are alcohol and drug-free? I mean, what is it that they need? And obviously you're going to know that the best living there, growing up there, working with other people there. That's similar to just what I've done. I just kind of looked out and said, what did I think people wanted to learn? And what could I help them with what I'm good at or what I believe I'm good at, how could I help these people? And that's all I really did. It wasn't like I sat there and, you know, created something miraculous. I just went off a passion of mine trying to help people off what I thought they needed to learn or wanted to learn.
You pretty often getting involved with some of these groups when they're setting up?
I do. I get questions like that all the time, and I'm happy to get those questions from anyone in this group, too, when they say, you know what, I'm kind of a one-person army here, and I'm trying to get stuff started. How do I even do it, you know? Because sometimes I got to kind of find out where you're at and what community support you have or you think you could get and what your goal is. I mean, you know, you see some of these communities that are operating at a really high level, and they're having events that are bringing in 200 and 300 people, and they're doing them every month, and yada, yada. Well, they didn't start like that. They started a lot smaller. But someone had a passion, someone had the ambition, and kept it growing. So don't be discouraged when your first community event, you have 12 people, and you know, four of them are your best friends, or four of them are out of your house. So don't be discouraged out of that. You just have to know that that's still 12 people who actually cared to be there, and that's 12 more than were there if you didn't do it. And then you continue to grow off that. And as the program gets more successful, it'll get better. But again, you want to bring in the right stakeholders at the beginning. You want to get some of the schools involved. You want to get other people involved, maybe neighboring communities involved. You want to start, you know, partnering up and doing stuff, you know, and just watching it grow and getting your youth involved. Forgot to mention that part, too. You don't just want to do stuff for youth and not have them be a key component in it. Get them involved. Youth advisory groups. I mean, we call them that, but it's basically a youth group that meets and talks about ideas they have and let the youth lead. I mean, you can help them, but let them lead a lot of that stuff. Because, again, we're trying to help them, so let's encourage them and empower them also.
Okay, well, talk about yourself. Do you have a foundation, or how do you work that? And how could people get a hold of you if they wanted to ask some questions or ask for your help? Because I understand you work not only nationally, but internationally.
Yeah, and I left, you guys have my phone number, so I left that. People can feel free to give me a call. They can, I mean, that's probably one of the easiest ways is call me. They can send me an email to jgalloway, G-A-L-L-O-W-A-Y, at cityofboise.org. So it's Jay Galloway at cityofboise.org. They can send me an email. Happy to help you guys out. I mean, you know, give me a couple days to get back to you also, you know. But happy to help you out in any way. And, I mean, that's, you know, that's why I did this radio show is to continue really just to encourage people that you can. I guess if there's one message I want to leave you with, it's that even on your own, whether it's me helping you or anyone helping you, you can. You really have the ability, and you can make a difference. And, you know, are you going to make, you know, a worldwide difference? Maybe not. Maybe so. I don't know. But you are going to make a difference by doing something. And if you just look at doing something, you will make a difference. And it might just be your own household. It might just be your own, you know, golf team, your own yoga group. Whatever it might be, you're going to make a difference. And that's just really the way to look at it.
I suppose you could start off the assumption, a positive assumption, that if you have an idea that something needs to be done, that there are other people out there that would agree. It's just a matter of finding them and helping get them motivated and getting them together, because I think this is a major concern, what's happening to our kids and the drugs, the epidemics, and all the scary news we hear. So I think getting a hold of you or somebody locally would be really great. Now, you're on the police force in Boise, and this is something you do on the side, or do you have an independent business, or how do you work that?
Yeah, I am. I'm on the police force in Boise. So sometimes, yeah, I go out on my own time, and then other times I do stuff here locally, just helping out our local groups. So I just had a passion for it. I always have, and I started thinking back. I mean, I had a passion for it when I was going to college. I was doing community-type events and bringing in nonprofits and bringing in youth from some of the local youth centers to sporting events. I mean, I've been doing it probably since I was 19 or 20, and it was just, you know, I don't have a great story of how it really started. It just kind of started. It's just always been an interest of mine, and it's just been something I've wanted to do. I took teammates to homeless shelters. I mean, it's just stuff I've always done. So now, being a law enforcement officer, I have more of a platform to do it. And I've always, you know, instilled in my kids and instilled in my friends and my family, that if you have a platform, use it. Use it and do something with it. You don't have to, and it doesn't mean that you don't care if you don't, but my philosophy has always been use it and do something with it.
Well, it sounds like you found your calling. Your calling in life, and that's great. Some people don't, but this is exciting. And we've run out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking with Officer Jermaine Galloway in Boise on the police force, and been talking about cops, kids, and community. And I want to thank you, and next Tuesday we'll be back with another show.